All right, welcome to class today. I hope you had yourselves an enjoyable break. Before we begin, are there comments, questions? Before we begin, are there comments, questions, concerns, or other things for me? Yes. How's my spring break? Busy. How about yours? Oh, good. Other questions, comments, concerns, or other things? Okay. I hope many of you are making good progress on homework 5. I have seen relatively few of you submit preliminary work, concluded work. I will note, in case you haven't already discovered this, that a significant portion of the solution to the labs and homeworks of this module between the midterm 1 and midterm 2 are in the textbook. If you actually look through all of the things in chapter 4 of the textbook, you will find chunks of code that can just be part of your solutions. And some chunks of code that can't, so you need to read the text around them and see which ones fit. But I will mention that in case you haven't already noticed. I was not here to take questions on the material we covered last Wednesday about the components of processors and HCLRS. Are there any questions you would like to ask about this material? Yes? Will demuxers be covered at all this semester? No. There is technically one place where a demux might be useful, but it's sort of a corner case and we'll just hand wave over it. Muxes we'll use a lot, never demux. Other questions? Yes?
Homework 5 is a program counter one.
Lab 5 was program counter, right? Let's make sure that I got this correct. I believe Lab 5 was program counter. Homework 5 is maybe it is program counter. Oh, yes, yes. It is program counter. Apparently it is, yes. What was Lab 5? Do I have the same link for both of them? Oh no! I have a bad link. This will explain why so few people have done it. Okay. That's weird. I'll have to look into what I want to do about that. It should have a link of 2, not 1, in the link. And it is implementing these instructions. And apparently, if you went through the schedule, that wasn't visible, and that's a problem. Was it visible the other way? I'm curious. Let's see. If I go to the submission page, because some people have submitted it, and then I go to the task description. Nope, that doesn't work. Huh. I wonder how people found out how to submit it. Well, this is a problem. I will think about what to do about this. We may need to give you a little extra time. I will certainly add the correct link. But getting this all done before Wednesday now may seem a little bit weird. But then we got lab. Oh dear. Thank you for asking that question. I will try to decide what to do about due dates. Other questions? All right. So today we're going to start talking about how to build a processor. So it will be useful for doing this. And our plan is for the next several days, we're just going to walk through how to build an entire processor, and then we'll talk about why our build was wrong, and we'll build it again. This is also what our textbook does. The textbook actually builds it 3 times instead of twice. We're going to sort of walk through how we're going to build our processor. And to do that, we're going to start by talking about some basic organization. Now, when we're building processors or putting it on chip, we can say it's all happening at once, and it is. All of the gates happen as soon as they get input, which is as soon as the clock ticks. But it's going to be useful for us to imagine an organization, to break up things into what we're going to call five stages. So we're going to have five stages. Okay? And these five stages are picked in part because they're going to be useful when we try to make our system more efficient later on. But we're just going to say every instruction will do a subset of five stages in this order. And they are going to be named these names. These are not the names I would have picked if I were designing this. But they are pretty universal names, not just in our text, but throughout understanding pipeline processors later on, which we'll get to. So these are the five stages. They go through in this order. And we're going to walk through what their purpose is first, and then we're going to start talking about how we would think about instructions in them and try writing some actual code. So let's start with fetch. The purpose of fetch is to send the PC to memory and get back an instruction. We will need to do this for every instruction. We can't get it run an instruction unless we know what it says. Okay? So we will always have to do this. You had to do this for lab in order to figure out how many bits the instruction was. So you should already have HCLRS code that does this as part of the lab that you completed. Now the next one is called decode. And it's a weird name for it because when I think about decoding an instruction, I think about breaking it out into parts. But that takes no work. The parts of an instruction are just subsets of the wires. So I don't need to think about time being spent breaking an instruction apart. I just grab the appropriate wires. However, there is something I need to do to understand what the instruction wants me to do. And this one is going to read the register file. So when we think about our instructions, many of our instructions have two register arguments, which we learned when we were learning YA6, were RA and RB. And so we're going to have somewhere over here our register file. We're going to send it which register we're looking for, and it's going to send us back a value. We're going to send it which register we're looking for, and it's going to send us back a value from that instruction. Not all of our instructions will need registers. Some will need only one, some will need zero. We will handle that with a special register F in Y86, will be just don't bother reading. And so we can use register number F, or 15, to say, yeah, I didn't need that. But none of our instructions require more than two registers. There are instructions that require more registers than are in the instruction. Push, pop, call, and return all use the stack pointer. So they'll all have to read the stack pointer, but each of them has at most one other register. So we'll never need more than two registers for any of the instructions that we're going to use. So that's going to be our decode step. So we have a fetch, we have decode. Execute is going to do the work, by which we mean the mathematical work. Our execute is going to either add, subtract, XOR, or AND. These are the ones that we're going to build. Because these are the ones that Y86 has, and we could easily expand this out to more things. It is going to do this operation. It may also set or check condition codes or flags. So if we do a mathematical operation, we're going to set the condition codes. If we're doing a conditional move or conditional jump, we'll check those in this stage as well to decide whether we want to do the next step or not. Then we have our memory stage. Each instruction is designed to either read or write or neither, but never both. This is actually true of many real systems. There actually are ways of both reading and writing in a single instruction in x86, but most instructions try to avoid that. We're going to just force in y86 an instruction to either read or write, but not both. And so our memory stage is going to have Is it reading, writing, or neither? So that is one input we send out to memory. Okay? We're going to need to send an address if we are reading or writing. And we might need to send a value if we are writing. So send those out to memory, and it might send us back a value if we were reading. Now, as we learned already, memory is really complicated. We've got caches and virtual memory, and there's a lot of things going on. This might take a long time. We're just going to ignore the long time part of it for now. We will get in 3 weeks, maybe 3.5 weeks, to how we'll deal with the long time of it in practice. But for now, we're just going to say, we're going to go there, grab a value, and keep going. And then the last thing we'd ever need to do is we might need to write to the register file. Okay? We have an instruction that modifies two registers. Pop will modify both RSP and its destination register. And so we're going to need to have, in general, we're going to need to have a register we're writing to, which for various reasons, the textbook calls E. One of them it calls E, and the other one it calls M. And so we're going to have which register it is and what the value is we're writing there, and we send those off to the register file. If we do these steps, or a subset of them, in this order, we'll be able to do all of the instructions in Y86. We will never have to do anything out of order. We'll never have to do anything beyond these pieces. And this organization of thinking about the operation in these five stages will help us organize what is going on in the different instructions. Questions? Yes? So in our textbook, they name the two registers that could be written, one E and one M. And the reason they call them E and M is one of them was generated in the execute stage and one of them in the memory stage, usually. But of course, RR move, it was generated in the decode stage. And IR move, it was generated arguably in the fetch stage. And so they use this as a general name of the two because they didn't want to reuse A and B. And that's what they fixed. Yeah?
For the decode stage, does it have to check if it's like a push instruction to send for RSP?
Yeah, so I need to know which registers to get and how many to get based on the I code. So all of these are going to send different details out based on the previous stages. And all of them are going to be based on the I code from the instruction which we got during fetch. Other questions? All right. All of our instructions can be done in these steps. And generally speaking, what that means is we're going to need a big mux in each of the stages to decide what we're sending out to the different steps for this step. Okay? So let's just consider some of the pieces of what we might need. So I've got fetch, decode, execute, memory, write back. Nop and halt are easy, huzzah. We don't have anything to do in any of the stages except fetch. Let's consider a slightly more complicated instruction. Let's consider IR move queue. Let's remind ourselves what IR move queue looked like. I don't know why weird things are happening here. Okay. IR move queue. Where do I have my Y86 summary? IR move queue moves an immediate into a register. Okay? So if my I code is 3, I have an immediate and I have register B. And so if I think through what I need to do here, for IR move queue during fetch, I'm of course going to do what I always do during fetch. I'm going to send the PC out, and I'm going to get back an instruction. Our instruction is going to give us 10 bytes, because that's the biggest instruction in our language. And we're going to look at those bytes to figure out what the I code is. So we're going to take this instruction, and we're going to break off the I code. And then given the I code, we're going to break the rest into one of several possible groupings. So you notice I've got, in general, four possible things. I can have just the one byte, I can have the two byte, I can have the 8, 9 byte, or the 10 byte version. And so I'm going to check to see which of those four cases I am to pull out the other pieces. So in this particular case, I'm going to need to grab my immediate from bytes 2 through 9. Okay? Or bits 16 through 27. So what will that look like? I can say, all right, I want to say V is going to be my I 10 bytes from 16 to, how far did it go? To 79, 80, I guess, right? I can always grab this data. This data is only correct for three of my instructions. For the other instructions, I don't want to use it, but I can always pull it off of the information. I can always find this V, which I believe is also called D. So maybe I'll call this VD. I'm just naming these groups of wires. There is no work being done here, no gates involved. I'm just saying those wires have that name. So if I'm thinking about actually physically doing it, coming out of memory, I have 80 wires. Because it's giving me back a 10-byte value. And I'm just naming a subset of them. I'm saying these ones here, I'm going to make a copy, send them over this way. I'm also going to keep sending the rest of them down so I can do other things with them. So I'm really just routing wires off to the side so I can use them if I want them. I will also need to get out RA and RB, which are always the same place, right? RA and RB, if they exist, they're always in the same location. In every instruction that uses them at all, it uses them in the same part of the instruction. And I notice here that I have them in bits 8 through 15, right? So I would likewise pull out from these, I would pull out my other chunks. Each of these would be 4 bits wide. And we could even figure out exactly what they're going to be. This will be, what is, A is the high order, right? So A is going to be 12 through 16, and this is going to be 8 through 12. And again, all I am doing here is naming a subset of the wires that are provided by memory. No work. It's just for my sake of naming them. Okay, and so now I have collected all the information I need. I've also named the I code, probably the iFund, though I don't need it for IR move queue. But I found them, I've named them, I have fetched. This is my fetch. Question about fetch. Yes?
So this should take no time, right? Since we're just splitting off
wires. The splitting takes however long it takes electrons to move along a wire. It's practically instantaneous. Yep. It takes no power, which is probably a better statement than no time, because it takes time for information to move. But, yeah. Other questions? Yeah? So these are the ones I'll need for IR move to. Which other ones will I have gotten the information I need for? So I've gotten V and D, so IR move Q, MR move Q, RM move Q, I've gotten all of those. I've got the registers for all of those that need registers. I'm not going to use V and D when I'm doing, for example, NOP, but it doesn't hurt to name those wires, right? So I've only got two unnamed things. I haven't named my iCode /CC thing, and I haven't named my destination. But those are, again, just numbers of wires. I name them, now I have all of the named wires I need. Other questions? Yeah.
So if we're doing IR move Q and we got bits 12 to 16 for RA.
Yeah.
And IR move Q, isn't that F?
Yeah, it is. Why did I grab RA? Oh, well, I was grabbing the R's, I just grabbed it too. I don't actually need it for IR move Q. Oops. Doesn't hurt to name it, though. If I wanted to validate the instruction set, I could then check to make sure it was an F and that IFUN was a 0 and give you an invalid instruction if it wasn't, which might be nice if I want to later be able to do other things. Other questions? Okay, that was fetch. Now, decode. The purpose of decode is to read values from registers. For IR move Q, how many registers do I read their value? 0. There is one register being talked about, but it's a destination-only register. Right? Remember what IR move Q is? It looks like this. Right, this is what it looks like. It's reading only from an immediate. So I don't need to do anything at all for decode. No work needed. No register values need to be read. So it actually doesn't matter what I do here. If I chose to read registers, it wouldn't hurt. I just not use the output. It would consume a little extra energy. But I don't need to worry about doing anything at all in decode. What does it mean to do nothing? What it means to do nothing is when I come back here and think about my register file, I want to make sure these RA and RB that go into the register file for this case are going to be F. Okay? So somewhere in my code, if I'm thinking about my register file sitting here, here's my register file. It has this input. What should that input come from? That input should come from a mux. Right? And sometimes it should be nothing at all, just the constant F. And other times it should be that RA bundle of wires. Because I'm either reading register A or I'm not reading. Maybe I'll also have RSP come in here. We'll get to that when we get to push and pop, how we want to do that. But in principle, in the hardware, I'm just putting a mux here with a selector based on something about the I-code. Or if I want to think about that in HCLRS, that would mean I would say something like whatever, I don't remember, it's not named that. Is it register? I don't remember what it's named. Whatever its name is. I would make it a mux. And in the mux, I would have things like if the I-code is equal to IR move Q, if it's equal to IR move Q, then I want to use just the constant value F. And I would have other cases after that to handle other situations where I did want to read from the register file. So these two things mean the same thing. A mux physically present or a mux expression in HCLRS. The mux expression tells the thing that's building the hardware that we need a mux. Questions? Okay. Let's keep going. Execute. Purpose of execute is to do math. What math do I need to do for IR move Q? None at all. Hooray! Isn't that nice? Nothing to execute. Purpose of memory is to read or write from memory. What do I need to do there? Nothing at all. Hooray. And then for write back, I need to set the value of a register. Okay? So I need to provide a value and a register destination. We had said, more or less according to the book's arbitrary decision, that the two ports, the two write ports of a register file, one is named E and one is named M. So we need to pick one of these two. It doesn't matter which one we pick. Our textbook suggests one, but we could pick whichever one we want. We're going to pick one of them, and we're going to wire up to it RB, right? That named value is going to be the place we're getting it from, and we're going to put this other place is going to be VD. Now, not always. This is just for IR move queue. Again, we'll actually have a mux that's going to do this if the I code is IR move queue and do other things for other instructions. For IR move queue, what do we put on the other one? Well, we definitely want to only write to one of the two. So we're going to put the no register for the other one, which tells it not to write a register. So we don't modify any other registers. We only modify the register that we wanted to modify. And this is how we would go about doing IR move queue for our system. Yes?
Just to jog my memory. So when you're reading or writing to memory, there's an explicit signal you have to give, right?
Yes.
You don't have to do anything like, hey, here's the sentinel value.
Yeah, let's go figure that out. All right. Oh, that's the PC. Where do I have? I don't have. Here we are. Nope, this isn't the right one. Let's go to. All right, so. R flavor. Yeah, so here we have all our built-in things. All right, what do we have here? We notice that memory has a write bit and a read bit. We want to set both of those to zero for IR move queue because we don't want to read and we don't want to write. Since we set them both to zero, it doesn't matter what we set the address to or the input because they're not being used. Other questions? Yes? So yeah, I mean, the stage is just a sort of a way of understanding, organizing ourselves for now. But yeah, write back is where we'll handle modifying the registers. Other questions? Yeah.
Do we have to do anything special to make sure that our values come on the bus or come on the wire, like as the clock hits the rising edge, or is that just?
No. What is the clock going to do? So let's think about a different way of thinking about our processor. Our processor is going to be organized as follows. We have the PC register, which is connected to the clock. And we have the register file, which is connected to the clock. But only the writing part of it is connected to the clock. The reading happens right away. And that is going to be the, actually I'm going to put these sort of beside each other. It might make it a little easier to visualize time, right? We have our register files where we have a clock for writing only, not for read. We actually don't need a clock for reading because all that reading is doing is all 15 registers are outputting their values at all times. And reading is just picking one of them with a mux. So it's an unclocked operation to read. It's only a clocked operation to write. Okay? And so what happens is when the clock ticks, the value from the PC goes up to memory, which is unclocked and immediately gives, or soon gives us a value, which then we split up into several values and we put through a whole bunch of muxes, mux, 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 all the way down, so many muxes, all wired together in some sort of mess. And eventually out the other end is going to come some values that we're going to put into the register file and some values that we're going to put back into the PC. All of that logic just does its work. If there's no clock, if it's not a register, then it does it as fast as the gates can move. So the clock ticks, signals start propagating through all of this mess. Eventually they all stabilize, and we hope they all stabilize before the next clock tick. The next clock tick comes along, and we get both the next PC and the new values in the register, and are ready to start running the next instruction. Other questions? Yes?
It's kind of modern processors like stay in sync. There's so many like things that can slow it down.
This way. So So what could slow it down? You're saying so many things can slow it down. Give me an example.
Network
access. Network access. How am I going to handle network access? I am not going to have a single instruction that goes to the network and gets data back. I'm going to have an instruction that goes to the network. And then what is that instruction going to do? It's going to tell the operating system, I'm done. And we're going to suspend the process using an exception until eventually the network, thousands, millions of cycles later, billions of cycles later, possibly finally says, oh, here's the answer. And the operating system is going to see that as an exception. And it's going to say, oh, I have an exception. There's some data. What should I do? It's going to run some of its code, and it's going to jump back to my code. So big delays like network access, disk access, we're going to handle with exceptions. Small delays like memory access, we won't. So memory access might take 100 cycles. That's not enough to be worth switching out to the operating system. So a real system will not actually have sort of a one instruction that's going to memory. It'll have an instruction sort of like start going to memory, and that instruction sort of hang out in this nether region waiting for its answer to arrive, and then it'll continue. And we'll talk more about that as two optimizations down the line. We'll get to the point where we can actually make that work. Yes?
So just to be clear, like while it's fetching the memory, it doesn't go to the next instruction.
Right, so for now we're going to assume we're going to let everything finish before we move on. If we wanted to do that in this processor, but wanted memory to be able to take a long time, there's two options. Either we make the clock so long that the worst possible memory access could finish, or we're going to have our memory be able to turn off our clock. So we have a wire that comes out of memory and says, am I done yet? And only if it's done yet will we allow the clock to go to another rising edge. And so we could either disable the clock while memory is working, or we could just make a really long clock cycle. We'll learn some more advanced ways of handling that as we move into fancier processors. Yes?
And so currently, we're just waiting until it...
Currently, we're just assuming we're going to wait long enough. We'll make our clock cycle 1 second. Won't that be fine? Or we're going to pretend like you have tiny memory, which in practice we're usually going to have because we're writing toy little programs for now. And so the memory can be fast. Other questions? Okay, so IR move to you is a relatively simple instruction. It doesn't do very many things, right? It goes into the system, it needs to be parsed, and has a write back, and that's all. Every other instruction besides halt and nop are going to be more complicated. Almost all of them are going to decode. They're going to read some register values. Some of them are going to do some math, and so forth. But all of them, if you just ask, what math do I have to do? What registers do I need to read? What memory do I have to do in this order? All of them will work out. Now, if you do it sort of naively one at a time, you'll end up with really messy code. Wires going all over the place, lots of mexes with hundreds of inputs, complicated systems. So part of what the textbook does, and part of what we do to try to make this cleaner, is instead of thinking about one instruction all the way through, we can also think about one stage, all of the instructions. Okay? So, let's try thinking about one stage, all of the instructions. Decode is going to be the easiest. Well, I guess fetch is going to be the easiest. We've sort of already done fetch. Right? We said we always need to get one immediate, the two registers, we always need the I code, we always need the I FUD, and we can go ahead and grab the other immediate. There's a handful of things to split apart. And then for decode, we pretty much always just use RA and RB. However, push, pop, call, and return need RSP. So look at push, pop, call, and return and decide, if I want to make a clean design, which register read, A or B, should I use for RSP? I've got two read ports, A and B. Which one makes sense to use for RSP, for call, return, push, and pop?
B.
Why B? Yeah, because it works for all four of them. I could use A, but it would only work for call and return. And that would be okay. I could say for call and return, we put RSP on A, and for push and pop, we put it on B. But why would I? Why make my life more complicated? And this is an example of the things we can understand in making a circuit simpler if we look at all of the instructions that we'll need a stage. Okay? And so let's think about what that would mean. Let's just consider just the decode stage. All right, the decode stage is going to have to pick RA and RB. For every instruction, it needs to pick RA and RB. Well, they're not called RA and RB in HCLRS. Let's figure out what they're called in HCLRS. Where do I have that? Ah, here I have it. We call them register source A and register source B. So I have here my source A and my source B. And every instruction has to put something on these wires. I can't have a wire not attached to anything because that creates capacitance, which slows down my processor and create weird side effects. So I always need to give it some input. But I want different inputs in different circumstances. So I'm going to need some kind of MUX. Okay, I'm going to need a MUX for each of them. So let's just think about all of the possible values. Let's start with A. So I see here, if I grab wire A, that part of those four wires out of my instruction, that will give me the right thing for all of my moves and my push and pop. It'll give me the wrong thing for jump, call, return, halt, and nop. And for those, I need an F instead. So for source A, I either need just the constant F, or I need those four wires from the input. It's always going to be one of those two. For all of my instructions, it'll be one of those two. And I can just verify, for halt, it'll be F. For nop, it'll be F. For R move Q, it'll be A. For I R move Q, it doesn't matter, they're the same value. R, MR, and op Q, it'll be A. Jump, call, return, it'll be F. Push, pop, it'll be A. And so I'm just going to have it coming in here something that tells the difference between those two. So I'm going to have an I code is sort of in this set of values. Okay? Now, in a set of values turns out to be relatively easy to build in hardware. It's just the OR of a few AND gates. Exactly why that's true may be obvious if you took digital logic design, but that's not a prereq for this class. Only about half of you took it. If you didn't take it, you're welcome to trust me, or you can talk about to me about after, but we could just do this with an OR of an AND gate. It's very easy to check to see if some value is in a set of constants. So I just check to see if it's a set of constants. And so I take all of the ones, let's see which one we have fewer of, 1, 2, 3, 4. I think you only have 5 cases that it needs to be F, so let's say this is 1 and that's 0. And so I'll say if it's in nop or halt or what else did I need? Jump or call return, right? Those are the other two. If it's in one of these instructions, then I'm going to use constant F. Otherwise, I'm going to use those four wires from the instruction. Questions? All right. See if you can do the same thing for source B. What are all of the cases? Let me see if I can get everything on the screen at once. Probably not. I'll try. What are all of the cases for source B? And then what are the conditions by which you do them? Chat with your neighbor, see if you can sort out what source B's MUX should look like.
not in that theory taking registering. So it ends up being actually
more time. I want more time. Okay. Let's see if I remember the keyboard. Nope, that's not the one. This is the one. All right, good. All right. There are three possible cases. What are the three possible cases? Somebody give me one. Yeah. I have no register. Great. Another one. RB. Hooray, we got the two easy ones. The hard one. Yeah. No, destination is not a register number. It is not visible here, but we talked about it earlier. Yes?
RSP.
RSP. I hear a lot of people like, oh, all right, I'm going to give you another minute. Let's see if you can figure out the cases for each of these three. Cases. I could keep trying to make an index into these things, as we would think if we were actually building a MUX. But in practice, we're often going to instead just talk about the cases themselves. Write them out manually. And trust the compiler of hardware to analyze whatever messy logic we give it and simplify it for us. Because hardware can do that. We know, or software can do that. We know how to write code that can take complicated logical expressions and make them clean and simple. And so we can just try writing down the cases. The cases where I need it to be F are for I code 0, 1, 7, and 8, right? So I want 0, 1, 7, and 8. I could write out halt, nop, JCC, and call, but 0, 1, 7, 8 are going to be shorter to write. It's not 8. It's 6 and 7. Sorry. It's just 7. Just 7. Because call, return, push, and pop are all going to use the stack. So they're all going to need to read the stack. So 8, 9, A, and B are all going to use this. Call, return, push, and pop are all going to use RSP. And then RB is going to be used for the others, the ones that have an RB, which is 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. These are all of my I codes. I've just written down their numbers to be briefer on the drawing, but these are the cases that I want to do, where I'm sort of selecting by which of these values the I code happens to come in. Now, this is not quite something I could actually write, build as hardware. I mean, I guess I could make a 16-way mux with lots and lots of inputs. It'd be a weird thing to do. But I can trust the software to use the techniques of digital logic design, build a Carnot map for me, clean things up, and just make it work. And I don't need to worry about how that works. It just does. Huzzah. Just like I don't have to worry most of the time how a compiler works. It just does. Questions? Yes?
Do all those instructions, 898B, need to read the register, or do you need to write it?
If I'm using the stack, I need to read a register. For RRMoveQ, I need to read a register. For RMMoveQ, I need to read a register. For MRMoveQ, I need to read a register, but I only need to read RB. I don't need to read RA for MRMoveQ, right?
Wait, I was saying for like call return push.
Yes, to use the stack, I have to read the current stack pointer, use it to go to memory, and modify it, and then write the stack pointer. So those four both read and write the stack pointer. Okay? All right. Other questions? All right. We did this wrong. There's a mistake. Where is our mistake? For this instruction, we figure out which ones needed the data. But we didn't figure it out right. Some of these don't read what's in RB. In particular, RR and IR don't read RB. They only write to it. Okay, so it turns out that these two instructions, we said, oh, well, they're not on the F because they use RB, but they only use it as a destination. Ah, they shouldn't be down here. They should be up here. We have similar mistakes for RA. Some of these, in particular, MRMoveQ only writes to RA. It doesn't read RA. So MRMoveQ should also be in this set. What is the downside of reading a register when I shouldn't?
Time?
No, because the clock makes everything take the same amount of time. Not space, because it's just wires. I have the gates either way.
Energy.
We're not going to spend very much time in this class talking about power and energy usage, but as a broad stroke, energy is consumed when something changes on the chip. So anytime I change the output of the register file, I get a new register value. Anytime I change something, I consume a little bit of power. And so if I'm worried about maximizing battery life or trying to reduce energy usage in general, I'm going to want to make sure that everywhere I can, I don't read. As a matter of fact, for my reading stages, if you tell me not to read, the most energy efficient thing to do is keep reading whatever I read last cycle, because that won't change anything. And so there's all kinds of little optimizations we could do under the hood if we're thinking about power. There's a lot of things we can do about power, about changing your clock cycles and so forth. It's a topic that is complicated and interesting, but won't change the basic functionality. And so for our sakes, if you decide to read all of the time, you're probably fine. Unless at some point you assumed that the value read was zero because it didn't come out, because you didn't try to read anything, which is what a register file is going to do if we give it F. If we give it F, it's just always going to produce the number zero. And if you were banking on getting a zero because you didn't read a register and you didn't get that, we might be in a bit of a trouble. But for now, this will work out just fine. Okay. Questions about decode or IRMoveQ? Yes? Sorry, say it again. Do they go into a mux? No, they go into a register file, which actually has muxes inside. It could have a decoder, actually, but it's probably going to have muxes instead. So it's going to go into a register file, which we're just treating as a built system. Because figuring out how we make those is just, we could do it. It would take an extra day. I don't think it's worth our time. Other questions? I guess I can actually draw that answer. This thing goes into the register file. And in HCLRS, let's just make sure we're all on the same page there, all of the wires that go into or come out of the register file start reg underscore. So there are 6 such wires, 4 going in, 2 coming out. Oh, sorry, there's 6 wires going in, 6 wires going in, and 2 coming out. So there's 8 such wires, each of which is a group of, actually a wire cluster, right? But we'll commonly call them wires, right? So we have 6 things going in up here in the fixed functionality inputs, and 2 things coming out in the fixed functionality outputs for our register file. We also have some for our memory, both on the instruction and data side. Other questions? Okay. Let's come back to our stages. Fetch is just splitting up, sending something into the memory and fetch splitting out wires. Also modifying the PC, but you've already done that, so huzzah. Decode we've just talked about. Memory is going to be, and write back are both going to be similar to decode. And this is, we just sort of check all the cases and make sure we get all the values right. The one that's going to be messiest is execute. Execute is just a messier stage than the others. And it's a messier stage because there's more things to make decisions about. So let's think about what we need to do for execute. All right. How do we know what we need to do for execute? There's several different things we need to do. We could do plus, minus, and, or XOR. These are the 4 operations we could do. Each of these is binary operations. So I have, in general, operand 1 and operand 2 for each of them. I have a result, which might need to go different places. But I also, in addition to having the result, I also have flags. Right? Is it less than, greater than 0? How do I know what the thing was? Compare it to 0. And those flags could be set to different values, might be set, but might be not. They're only set in one, they're only changed if I had an op queue, but not if I did something else. Let's figure out which instructions are going to need execute. So let me go back to our set of instructions. Let's see if we can figure out which one of these need execute. Where is there some math happening? Clearly, opq is going to need to execute. That's its job, is to execute. But it is not alone. What is another instruction that needs execute? Yes? Jump. Why does jump need execute? Yeah, so I need to check the conditions. I don't change the conditions for jump, but I need to check the conditions. So this is doing math, and it's setting the condition codes. This is checking the condition codes. Yeah?
Push and pop, you have to modify RSP.
Push and pop need to modify RSP. What kind of activity is that? One of them needs to plus, and one of them needs to minus, right? Which one does which? RSP gets bigger when we push or pop? Pop. So pop is going to have a plus 8, and push is going to have a minus 8. Oh dear, 8. It is not anything in the instructions, it's just the number 8. Poof. Comes out of thin air. That's weird. Oh well. What else? Yeah? RM and MR, what do they need to do? Yeah, they need to add the immediate to a register. What else? Yes? Call and return also do the sys. Which one adds and which one subtracts?
Call subtracts, return adds.
Wow, that's most of them. Okay? We have four operations. We have to pick them partly based on the I code. If it's op, also based on the I fun. The operands come from lots of different places, right? Because sometimes it is going to be part of the address. So let's figure out what we have here, right? Here we have RB, RB. For these, it will also be RB because we decided that's where we're going to put RSP. So all of these are going to need RB. So one operand will often be RB. Oh, it's clearly one of the operands is RB for opq. That's great. The other operand, and jump doesn't actually have any operands because it's just checking condition codes. It's not setting them or doing any math. So when we do math, one of our operations is always the value of register B. That's nice. That's going to make one of the pieces easy. Then I have to have the other piece. And the other piece is sometimes going to be an immediate value. Sometimes it's going to be another register. And sometimes it's going to be either plus or minus 8. So I got four possible cases for the other operand. So I got two operands. One is just RB. The other one I'm going to have to pick from a mux of four different possibilities. An immediate register A, plus 8 or minus 8. And so my two operands, one of them is just going to be easy, one of them is going to come from a mux. Doesn't really matter which one we say is which for now. And then I have to pick an operation to do. How do I pick an operation? Operations are not numbers. Operations are circuits. And so what happens is, under the hood, we have this magical thing we call the ALU. The ALU, standing for let's see if I can write it correctly. The arithmetic logic unit. Because it does arithmetic and logic. And under the hood, there are sometimes some small optimizations we can make. But basically, an ALU looks like I have a little circuit that does XOR, and I have one that does and I have one that does subtract, and I have one that does add. And I put the operands into all four of them. I'm going to compute all four of these results every cycle. And then I'm going to pick one of them. So I'm going to take the outputs of those and put it into a mux. Now there are some optimizations I can do, so I don't actually have to do all of this work. I can share a lot of the logic between add and subtract, for example. And they're very similar circuits. There's some tricks I can do that make making it a single unit an efficiency, both in power and chip real estate. But conceptually, this is all I'm doing. Okay? So I'm just going to put it into the ALU. Because it's a mux of operations, the way you're going to write the ALU in HCLRS is you're going to make a mux, like any other mux, where you have operations. Right? We're going to have different cases. And you're just going to write it out like this. And that'll be fine. It'll work out just fine. If I were really, truly doing this, I would have a team developing the most efficient ALU possible, and I would give you something like a register file or memory where I say, these are the wires you can magically control, but for now we're just going to say, yeah, do whatever you want. We can trust somebody else to make it optimal. This just handles doing the math. On top of this, I also have to decide what the condition code should be, but only set them if it's an opq, otherwise leave them the same. And for jump, I need to compare the condition codes to the iFun and decide whether I'm jumping. So this is one of three parts of what I am doing. The condition codes, incidentally, the condition codes are going to be a register. Because I want the condition codes to stay from one instruction to another. So I'm going to have to make my own register to store the condition codes. And it's just going to be this little register, so only you have a few bits. The textbook and the assignment that will have you do this, we'll talk more about how you should do this. We'll do a 3-bit register. XA664 actually does a 4-bit register instead, but we'll just do 3. And we're going to have to set these things only on OpQ, otherwise leave them the same. What does it mean to set them only on OpQ, otherwise leave them the same? There's 2 ways we can do this. Our registers have this stall wire that says just don't change. So we could stall unless it's an OpQ. Or maybe a simpler way to understand, we could take the output of the condition code and make it one of the 2 possible inputs to the condition codes. And then if we pick that repeat, right, these are sort of the new condition codes. If we're anything but OpQ, we'll just keep the old values in place. And this is effectively what the stall is doing. So we're going to have this thing. We're going to have something to compare its output to the IFUN. We're also going to have all of this messy execute with a plus 8 and a minus 8. And what do we say the other ones are A and D, I think. A coming in here, going into one of the operands, and so forth. But we put all these pieces together, and we'll end up with a full execute stage. Questions? Yes?
With the ALU, does all the four operations get calculated and we select the result?
Yeah, that's how we're going to pretend it works. And it's actually not far from how it really works. How it really works, add and subtract will only get one of the 2 results because there'll be a sort of an extra thing. We'll effectively negate and then add to subtract. And so anyway, but conceptually, we'll just pretend it does all of the operations. And if this were an actual system, we would also have OR and bitwise negation and bang and multiply and all of the other things in there too. Other questions? Okay. I'm going to make an assertion, and then we're going to look at the calendar, and you'll see why the assertion's a little weird. I assert that from what we have said so far today, you can now implement the entirety of a simulator for Y86. You could go one instruction at a time and figure out what each of the stages need to do. You go one stage at a time, decide what all of the instructions need to do. There will be a little bit of mess about moving the output of execute into memory for memory reads. The textbook talks about efficient ways of doing that. You're welcome to look at that, right? But you could just sit down and do it all. And ta-da, you now know how to build computers. Of course, then we look at the calendar. And we see that today was learning about this sequential processor, and I have that for 2 more days on the calendar. We may only use 1 more day on the calendar. But what more could there possibly be to say? Chat with your neighbor. Anything that's left unclear about how we build a processor that does 1 instruction per cycle.
Thank you.
All right, questions or areas that we should think about looking at in the future? Nope, we're just good. We can cancel the next two classes and come back in a week and a half. Oh, yeah. No, I'm curious what you want. I already know what I think I'm going to do, but I'm interested if there's something you're interested in, or if you realize there's a gap. Yeah. Sorry, I can't hear you. Yeah, is there a more efficient way of doing all of this? There's so many kinds of efficiency we could talk about. We could talk about your efficiency as an implementer, less work. We could talk about the efficiency of the resulting system in number of transistors, in runtime. So we could certainly talk about those ideas. Other things maybe we should talk about as we move forward. Yeah?
What if we drop this assumption that memory fetches before the next clock cycle?
What if memory is slow? Then what? Yeah, we could certainly look at that. What else? Yeah?
I guess more instructions.
Yeah, are there other instructions that make things messier? Do they make things fundamentally messier, or just more copies of the same stuff? So we could certainly think about more instructions. What else? Yeah. Right? This is an instruction set that modern processors will turn into a different instruction set before they run it. Therefore, we could talk about how we do the translation?
Sure.
We could talk about what do we want the microcode to look like? What would be a better instruction set that would make our life happier? Huh. Anything else that comes to mind that you would, yeah?
Maybe prefetching? I know you mentioned that.
Prefetching. What is prefetching? We're going to have to guess. For this instruction, for this model of the processor, we won't need to guess. But you notice after we do sequential processors, we're going to do what we call a pipelined processor. There we will have to guess. We have to guess what's going to happen before we know the answer. So we'll get to see some of that as we move forward. That incidentally is not the same thing as prefetching. Prefetching is speculating about memory, but it's a similar concept. These are all interesting things. However, this is not what I'm planning to do next. We will talk about many of these things, but the thing I plan to do next is basically do it all again. Why would I do it all again? I'll do it all again because so far what we've done is said, oh look, every piece is small and simple. And as soon as you try to put the pieces together, you realize, ugh, that wasn't small and simple at all. In isolation, if all you had to do is build an execute stage, why wouldn't your life be easy? But when you really try to put them all together, you realize there's this complexity to it. Okay? So my goal today was to show you the pieces, give you a sense of where we're going. My goal on Wednesday, my plan is effectively to try to make the entire system design. What is the full process pipeline going to look like for the sequential processor that we're building? How do all the pieces work together? Why are some of the instruction designs made the way they are to make things more efficient? I'm not planning to technically cover anything new. We're going to just look at it all in a different way. Okay? And then depending on how things go, we'll either move pipe up a week or we'll sort of deal with some things that ended up being gotchas as you looked at it in more detail. I would strongly encourage you to at least glance through or try implementing some of these moving forward. I will try to make the links to the homeworks work better. Part of the reason I went through IRMOQ down to a fairly low level is because that's a third of the homework that's due Wednesday. I'll decide if I still need to update the deadline of that. But try it. And when you come back on Wednesday, you'll have tried it, hopefully, and you'll realize, some of you are like, oh, that wasn't too bad. And that's mostly because you were lucky. And others of you realize, ugh, that was too bad, and we'll talk about why it was too bad and try to make that systemic design. Once we have the full processor and sort of understand how it's working, then we can start dealing with how we make it more efficient. And sneak peek, the answer is we make it more efficient by making it more complicated. We're going to make our computer faster by making it do more work, which is not necessarily going to be obvious, since we're going to spend several days talking about what the new work is, why we're doing it, how it makes things faster when running. So that's sort of the outline of the next few weeks that we have. I don't think we can meaningfully make progress in any of that in the next 4 minutes. So does anybody have anything they want to talk about for the last 4 minutes? Then I will let you go 4 minutes early. I will see you all on Wednesday.